Welcome back to the Muddy River Tactical Podcast. This is episode 3, and we are going to call this one Mrs. Muddy, and you guys will figure out why here in a few minutes. You guys are in for a treat today. So, as always, I am the host, Kyle Mason. I do R&D, little engineering, that kind of stuff here at Muddy River Tactical. To my left, I've got Brett, not in his normal chair today because we have a special guest, and Brett runs our gun shop. Across from me, we got my brother, president, CEO, the man in charge, Mr. Kevin Mason. And then sitting next to him in Brett's spot, we've got Brett's boss, Mrs. Muddy River Tactical, Julie Mason. Welcome to the show, Julie.
Thank you.
So how hard was it for Kevin to talk you into coming here today?
It was pretty easy.
Pretty easy.
She's a talker. She'll ease her way into this, but by the end of it, she'll be going, I promise you.
She's been quiet right now. Here, I'll give you a softball right now. So you like to give Brett a hard time about being his boss. So Brett is an employee. Like, how is Brett as an employee for you?
He's pretty insubordinate.
He is? Needs a lot of direction?
Yeah. I write him up a lot, but he rips him up and
I will
gives
sign
them back
him first,
me.
Though. Yeah. I promise you that. I will sign it.
So how did that all come about? How did you come about being Brett's boss?
I was actually working for Kevin at the time before I went to school, and we were in the new building or moving into the new building, and Kevin said that I was going to share an office with Brett.
Well, Brett one day goes, well, where's she going to go when we go up to the new building? I go, well, she's going to be your boss. She's going to sit right next to you. So ever since, now they're like...
She didn't work for us very long after that. I'm just putting that out there.
So they're not like peas and carrots like Forrest and Jenny then?
No. Working with a spouse is a weird thing anyways, and you can ask her about that situation. But
so Kevin at work, like for the people at home that might be listening, what's Kevin like at work? Because I'm sure my wife would say very similar things about me, but it's good to hear about somebody other than yourself for a change.
Yeah, we can't work together. We figured that out pretty quick. He has some nicknames for me, and I get in my feelings a little bit because when he's in work mode, I...
So I'll just get this part over with. I call her Thug Baby.
Thug Baby?
Thug.
Oh, baby. Thug Baby.
Thug Baby.
Okay.
Because she wants to act like she's a gangster, like she just got off a life sentence, prison sentence, and that she's all tough and bad and running her mouth to Brett and everybody. And then as soon as we leave, she'll start whining to me, oh, do you think Brett really meant that?
He calls me Thug Baby, emotional gangster.
Yes.
Because when I'm in public, I'm a thug. When I'm at home, he says I'm an emotional gangster.
Yeah, then you got to baby her when she's not in public, but outside of that, you'd think she is Tupac or something.
Yeah. Yeah, well, she definitely kind of flexes it sometimes, so one thing I got to clear up for the audience, this is called Mrs. Muddy Rivers, episode 3. Now, before we get emails from people, whether they be, you know, have salon stylists or, you know, waitresses at Texas Roadhouse, this is not an open application for Mrs. Muddy River. This is... about Mrs. Muddy River, who already took the spot.
Yes, I'm not looking for a wife on The Bachelor or something at the moment.
So it's not like Catching Kelsey or none of that?
Not today.
Catching Kelsey.
Not officially. Let's put that out there.
You didn't even take the bait on that one. You left that one go and just kept on swimming, didn't you?
Felt my blood pressure go up just a little bit. I'm good.
All right. Before we get into the interview, I'm going to just remind everybody, we got our socials, Facebook, Instagram, X, Twitter, whatever you call it, YouTube. You can see the podcast there. Kevin does some really great shooting videos. So check us out there. Give us a like, a follow if you're liking what you're hearing. If not, leave us some comments. We'd love to hear what we can do better. And today we're going to actually have a question of the week that was viewer submitted. I think we got this one from Facebook this week. So if you have any questions at home, something you'd like to hear us talk about, submit your question, and the winners will get some free gear, whether it be a hoodie, hat, you know, maybe a gift card. You know, we'll send you something good for your time. So let's get into this, Julie. Tell us a little bit about yourself. Like, how'd you grow up? You know, what do you do now? Those kind of things.
Born and raised in Platte City, right here where our business is. And only child. Mom and dad married all my life. Dad's always ran a plumbing business up until he came to work for Kevin. I got tired of the plumbing industry, if you will,
You worked there too, didn't you?
I did. I worked for my dad for a little bit out of high school until I decided the medical field. My mom was always in the medical field, so I kind of decided I wanted to go into the medical field. But yeah, I worked for her dad for a little bit in the plumbing business, and that's really my story growing up. I mean, we never really were rich, if you will, but I never really needed or wanted for anything either. My dad was always a super hard worker, but being an only child was kind of lonely. My mom was diagnosed with cancer at 18, so that kind of changed my late adolescence, early adult years, but...
And kind of made you grow up a little bit faster, yeah, too, doing that, and, you yeah know, so you and Kevin are kind of similar, and, you know, upbringing, you know, not that any of us were poor or anything, but, no, you know, none of us were the rich kids at school, which, like we talked about before, is, you know, kind of the common misconception. And
yes.
So you guys that started off, you guys had Jordan pretty young.
Yes.
How old is Jordan now?
He is 16.
16?
Yeah, we were 21.
So, and Jordan's at the point now, too, where he's finding himself out in the workforce, and we'll get into more of this later, and, you know, yep, kind of teaching him, you know, the right way, and, you know, where you got to work your way up and get your experience just like all of us did.
Exactly, and with perception and stuff of his dad owning a business that's successful and stuff like that, we just want to make sure we keep our kids rooted and grounded with work ethic and stuff, so...
And the other thing about perspective, we talked about it on the other episode of just Muddy River in general, but with her dad, everybody in Platte City knows the Edlands, from Edland Plumbing to whatever. So we dealt with that persona too, that, well, Edland Plumbing gave us the building, Edland Plumbing did this, Edland, you know. So I think the persona was on both sides. Would you agree?
Sure. Yeah, definitely. It's always been a perception that we started with somebody giving us something to get us up and going.
And from an outsider, I can see how they think that, because yeah, Kevin has went and just dominated this thing, grew it from nothing out of your garage into, you know, not that we're the biggest holster company, but I am extremely proud of him. I know you are, you know, our parents are. I mean, the stuff he's done does not seem feasible to people. You know, they think the only way to get there is throwing money at it. And he's done it, you know, the old fashioned American way, you know, self-made, you know, from the start. So, you know, I can see where people get that, but it's just not the case.
Not at all. Not at all. He's truly built it 100% from the ground up.
So when you were growing up, you're talking about your dad and running the plumbing company. Your mom was in the medical field. Did you have anybody, you know, in your family that did any hunting, any, you know, shooting, anything like that, or...
I had an uncle and my grandpa when my grandpa was younger, but my dad was never, he was always a sports fanatic. He never really did the hunting, fishing. Every once in a while, I guess we would go and fish when my grandparents had a lake house down at Pomme de Terre, but I never really got to do the whole hunting, fishing scene until I met Kev.
So once you got into that, what were your thoughts initially? Like, oh my God, what did I get into here? Or did you find yourself enjoying it?
I actually really liked it. Especially the first time he taught me how to shoot a bow. That was fun. That was more my jam than the gun thing at first.
And it didn't take you very long to kill your first deer either. I mean, he got you kind of up and running pretty quick.
He did. He did. Same thing with our kids. He didn't waste any time.
So
how was that experience, Kevin?
With her?
Yeah.
Well, funny story about her the first time. Was this before or after you shot your first deer? I'll tell a story and then we'll... I don't know if it was right before she shot her first deer or after. We're at the farm, which we have a family farm in Bolivar. Me and Kyle's farm in Bolivar, left to us by our grandparents, or grandpa, 80 acres down there. Anyways, Kyle goes down there way more than I do now. But when me and Julie first got together, took her down there deer hunting. And I forgot what it was. A deer came across. I'm like, okay. Yeah. She gets it on there. And she's like, the gun won't shoot. I'm like, what do you mean the gun won't shoot? So she's swearing to God the gun won't shoot. I'm like, well, take the safety off. It was a Remington 700 bolt action gun. Mm-hmm. I did, and it won't shoot. So I gave her a whole bunch of shit about that. Do you remember this?
Yes.
Was this before or after your first deer?
That was my first deer.
Okay.
And she's sitting on the lane where the deer go.
No, she is in the tree stand.
Oh,
in the tree
okay. Stand. I thought you were on
so
the
tripod. So it went across there okay fairly fast and it's gone. But the funny thing is that night, Jordan was little. So I think that night she didn't go. She stayed at the house of Jordan or something. and I was going to shoot a deer, same gun, the damn thing wouldn't shoot. So then I felt like an asshole because I was telling her, I was like, there ain't no way the damn thing don't shoot. To this day, I still don't use that gun. I still don't know what's wrong with it, but it'll shoot sometimes with the safety off and sometimes it won't. And it's weird. So I just never did it. But I think Remington's had that issue trigger-wise.
A safety recall it. If it was an
old, I probably just need to do it.
If you knew somebody with a gun shop, you could probably have that repaired, yeah. You know.
Well, $30.
Sometimes minimum. I think Kevin has a recall too.
Maintenance guy is not the best at recalling stuff sometimes. For those of you that don't know, I refer as Brett as a maintenance guy in everything. It don't matter if it's at the shop or at the house. Talk about the skid steer last time. I was like, well, my maintenance guy hasn't changed the oil in quite a while, so I don't know what it's at.
Real quick, people appreciate this. Tell them about having to be rescued from your skid steer.
Okay. And this goes back to, I give Brett a lot of shit, but he is always there when I call. So Julie was working. She works nights on the ambulance. So she works six or seven, depending on what truck she is, at night till 6 or 7 in the morning. So the kids are old enough at home where they can watch for themselves. I'm working in the woods, making deer plots and stuff, because our six-year-old's all into hunting. So I'm on the skid steer, knocking over trees, just tearing stuff up to make a new food plot. Well, one of the tree's limbs fell off and came and hit the skid steer. It's like the beeper or something on top of the door. Well, it bent it down where I could not open the skid steer door. And it's a John Deere skid steer, so it's not one that rolls up inside. It's got to open outwards. So I'm sitting there for like 30 minutes. And granted, on our farm, we have zero service about 99% of the time. So I can't get out of this thing. I'm literally driving the skid steer around trying to get service because I'm stuck in the damn skid steer. And at this time, it was still muddy, wasn't it?
No, it was about to storm.
Yes.
And we had to get it done before it started raining.
For some reason, I couldn't get back to the house. Like, I couldn't go to the house and honk the horn and have somebody come.
You got deep ridges, and when it gets muddy, it is slicker than snow.
It's either muddy or a tree. I don't know. Whatever. So I call him. He had to come rescue me out of my own skid steer and pop the emergency door off of it for me to crawl out at, 8:30 at night? And then it starts raining, so then we're trying to get the door back on the skid steer at 9 o'clock.
And you're telling me the door doesn't just go back on. Those are like single-use
pieces? It's a single-use pin, but MacGyver over here got it back on.
We got it back on. Don't worry.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So
good times.
So with that being said, Kevin, he is out on route driving for Pure Air one day. Mm-hmm. Gets stuck in an ice storm in a hotel room down in Bolivar, Missouri. Trying to find a holster for this gun. Can't find one, whatever. And he decides he's going to start making his own holsters.
Yep.
Not selling them, not a business. Well, when he tells you he's going to start ordering stuff so he can make a $50 holster, what are you thinking?
The worst part, not to cut her off, but the worst part is when I first started, it was those little wallets. Remember they had the Kydex wallets?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
So I didn't think I was going to be good enough to make a holster. I was looking at trying to figure out, but I'm like, okay, I'll start and make a wallet first. So all the first stuff I made, remember those first little fold-over wallets, was actually the first thing. And I sold one of them to Jonathan Thompson that still comes in the gun shop and stuff to this day. But that was 2014, 2015 or something.
Okay, so he's making wallets, and all of us at the time, are working 60 hours a week plus. So he's working 60 hours a week, and he's like, guess what, babe? I'm going to start making holsters after work with young kids in the house and with you working too. So how did that all kind of play out?
Here's where the thug of Thug Baby came out.
Well, I always knew when we met that I knew right out of the gate he was going to be an entrepreneur at something. We had done some trial and error. He had done lawn care for a little while. He did a cleaning business, like commercial cleaning business for a little while. Nothing was really like taking off per se.
Well, it was nothing that I had anything passionate.
Passionate about, exactly. It was, I had to, or to get something up and going. So when this came about, I was like, I thought he was dumb. I was like, what?
She still thinks I'm dumb, by the way, for those of you that are questioning this.
I just could never see this being something that had such a big market, if you will, that would ever support a family. I mean, he was making really good money. and had good benefits, and but he was having to work so many hours, being gone in a hazmat truck, always worried, like, with the weather conditions and stuff, if he were to wreck.
And not to interrupt you, but for, like you said, we were delivering oxygen. The trucks had to go every day. This isn't an Amazon package. When it iced, we had to drive. We had to drive no matter what, because grandma's got to go to her doctor's appointments. If the truck doesn't get there, she can't go out, you know. I mean, people's lives are on the line doing this. So super high stress, got to be there on time.
100%.
And to be fair, during this time, these holsters weren't big.
No.
This wasn't a huge market yet.
No.
And he just started right at the right time.
Right. However, I will say that I've heard several people, I know not you guys, obviously, but I've heard several people, and they say he just started, he found his niche and he just started it at the right time and got lucky with politics and things like that. And yes, to a small extent, but failure is not an option to Kevin Mason. And so going 4 years without ever taking, drawing a penny from the business, hours, I don't even think you went to one of our youngest doctor's appointments when I was pregnant, and he never even made it to a doctor's appointment.
I was there for the birth, obviously, right. But other than that, I wasn't. And on that quote, if you go in my office to this day, it's still hanging there, but there's a sign that's very true, and I look at it literally every day. 97% of people that quit are employed by the 3% that never gave up. And that's what, it don't matter if it's this business or anything, there is always luck. I'm not going to say we weren't lucky in some ways, but persistence and the drive to keep going through all that is what
will
make it work.
The luck part is there at the beginning, but after that, when something would knock you down, luck doesn't pick you back up.
Right.
So, and that's happened to more than a handful of times.
Right.
You know, so, you know, luck isn't going to fix all those. And so that's got to be you or the people you're around.
I take offense to that, like, in a small way when people say that, because I'm like, yeah, the luck, getting it, something that stuck and something worked, but it was nothing short of luck after that.
Yeah.
It was a lot of sacrifice. And so I think my thug baby protective nature kicks in when people say, oh yeah, he was lucky and he found the right niche and it was the right time and politics and everything else. And that's not true.
Well, and the work part that I can speak to, because I wasn't here, but, you know, obviously being his brother, I saw a lot of it, is at Christmas, every family gathering, Kevin's, hold on, my phone's ringing.
Yep.
And he's going,
still to this day, still, yeah,
dealing with customers, answering emails. And that was 24/7 forever.
24/7, 365 days a year.
No matter where you are in the country.
Yep.
Or out of the country.
We went on trips together, and it's he can't stop.
We were all in Jamaica just however long ago that was. All of us here were in Jamaica, and it never stops. And that's the thing about business, is to me it's just normal. Like, I don't know any different. Like, if I had a job where I worked 6 to 3 and never had to worry about anything else, I would not feel complete. It's not my DNA to stop that long. And to a lot of people, that's not them, and that's great. But to me, it's just never been that.
Yeah, and I think, and you can say what you want about family histories and stuff, and this isn't to bash anybody in my family, anybody else's family, but in general, I tell people all the time, I do not idle well. Kevin right. does not idle well.
Not
so if you see us on the beach somewhere, I'm out looking for seashells or going around. I can't sit. So the same thing with working. I'm texting him on the weekends, hey, have you thought about this for the podcast? Or, hey, look at this. We could do this on our holsters. And he's geared towards that, where we've taken some of our family history. We've had, you know, like a lot of people, you know, alcoholism, like gambling issues, you know, members of our family have had that, and we've recognized that. But instead of going that route, we've miraculously funneled it into productive things and, you know, made the most out of that. But, you know, that's just Kevin, and he's got to have something driving him all the time, because if he doesn't, he'll go crazy.
It's 100% spot on. And like both of you, I feel like you guys had a father figure that gave you guys one way to look at things or another way to look at things, and you guys completely took the opposite road. For both of you, I know your dad has passed away rest in peace by all means, but I think you guys just took life and looked at it through a totally different lens.
Well, and this is not to bash our dad at all, but, you know, and it's a lot of fathers, especially from those days. I can't remember a baseball, basketball game that he was ever at that I remember.
No, when I was playing Little League, he coached the team for a few years. Yeah. But in high school, like, I know, did he ever come to one of your football games? No. Like, none of my basketball games, track meets, and it was different. But he will tell the story of our grandpa, who was a card in himself. But T.O. never told Dad one time that he was proud of him, that he loved him. Like, when we'd go over there, I'd be like, all right, Grandpa, I'll see you later. Love you. He'd be like, yep, okay. Like, that was just Grandpa.
Yeah, there was no emotion to either one of them.
Right.
No. So, you know, coming from that, like, he did make progress, and he got a little softer the older he got, when he was starting to get sick and when the grandkids started coming around and stuff. So, you know, not to bash him at all. It's just, you know, everybody grows up different. And
he just, I don't feel like he had quite the work tenacity that you boys had either. And you guys are so self-driven.
Well, and that's why, like, how he was, I think, to a lot of ways benefited me, because instead of where you came from, it's what you make out of something.
For sure.
Our grandpa, his dad, never gave him nothing, so he just went with that.
Right.
You know, if anything gives me more motivation, running a business, I can't be there. I mean, I don't miss their games and stuff.
Not at all.
But I can't be there for every school. You know, there's stuff I am going to miss. I'm there for the important things. But it's the taking care of them and the fine line of giving them more than what we had, but not enough to spoil them, I guess, would be the best way to put it.
From an outsider looking in on this conversation, both of you, knowing both of you, you treat emotionally completely different than I think you both grew up. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I would say that's fair. Whether the material items, you give them things or not, that's not the point. It's the emotional point right now. Like, you guys are there for your kids, no matter what.
Yes.
And that's
always have been two of the best dads I've ever met in my life. And again, just knowing my father-in-law, knowing their dad and what they grew up with, my mother-in-law and I talk about this all the time. Two of the most hardworking, honest, loyal, faithful men I've ever met in my life.
Well, and even from a business standpoint, I mean, we're talking about older, and this was when Dad was sick. He never once came up to Muddy River Tactical, ever.
Nope. Right.
Never. Nope. Like, Brett's been there for a long time. Brett never seen him.
Nope.
You know, he has never, and I'm not even mad about it, but, you know, it's just a different character type of thing.
And right. You say that, and it's funny, because Dad, when he would tell that story about T.O., never said he's proud of him. He said, the closest I ever heard is they were going coyote hunting one morning, and they'd stopped at whatever truck stop to get biscuits and gravy. And Dad went to the restroom, and he said he came back, and Grandpa couldn't see him coming. He's like, yeah, my boy, he's getting pretty good at, you know, hunting and shooting now, and he's finally, and then he caught sight of Dad coming up, and he, like, completely changed his mind.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. I think it's a generation.
I think there's some remnants of that, but it's, like, the same thing. You know, I'd talk to Dad about how you're doing. He's like, oh, have you talked to Kevin? I was like, oh, yeah. And he's like, well, he's doing real good, isn't he? So, like, he would say it to other people, but, like, I think it was weird for him to be like, oh, I'm really proud of you.
And right.
Like, for me, like, and I don't say it all the time, but especially before I worked here, like, I'd talk to Kevin, call him on his birthday, and just be like, look, I am proud of you. You are killing it. Like, I can't, you know, believe it, and, you know, not to be savvy or whatever, but it's good to let people know that, and, you know.
Without a doubt.
That's kind of part of coming over here, too, you know.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So we're talking about family and everything. So Kevin's starting this business and putting in these hours. You've got to have concerns for your family, your marriage, your kids. What are you thinking right now? Is like just the amount of time that's getting put into this and, you know, trying to balance everything.
Yeah, I mean, we went, there was phases and times where I didn't even know if we would be able to withstand the storm. I mean, you know, you go from spending the kind of time that we got to spend together to almost overnight having to take a 60-hour work week and, I mean, damn near double it. Between, he was getting maybe like 3-4 hours of sleep in a 24-hour period, maybe. And then just not being involved with a lot of things, not because he didn't want to, but because he literally couldn't. And I being young, I was still in my 20s, had some immaturity there as well.
And motherly instinct as well, I believe.
Oh, without a doubt. My maternal instinct was like, how dare you, like, not, don't do this where you weren't, aren't a part of things like your dad was with you. We've always promised we wouldn't do that with our kids. And looking back on it, I'm so grateful we locked arms and got through it. It was some of the toughest time of our marriage. It definitely tried us, but I think it ultimately made us stronger too. Cause now we went from, I mean, I hate to use this terminology because we like to live a pretty humble life, but you go from rags to riches. And you, now that we're in that phase where we've gotten through that daunting, hard time of building and grooming a business and putting everything and every moment he had into it, we now get to benefit, go on vacations, he can take a day off and we can go spend it together while our kids are in school and stuff that we could never do before, ever.
And you say that too, but you're still humble and rooted. And I know there's a lot of them that never get talked about, but the things you guys do under the table, that's not the charity for Instagram, it's not look at us, but the amount of people you help, like somebody, you know, may have had a situation and they needed a hand up, working people that don't qualify for assistance, but, you know, they find themselves behind on something. And I mean, I know a few of them and I'm not going to, you know, speak to direct, but like you've helped a lot of people along the way, bring them along. And it's not for social media. It's not for likes. It's not for clicks. It's out right. The goodness of your heart.
Yeah, 100%. That's a thing that we do and don't want anybody to know. You know, there's companies, especially companies that are, well, we'll do it if you put our name on it. We don't even want Kevin and Julie on it, let alone Muddy River. You know, I mean, everybody, there was times when we asked people for help, you know.
For sure.
So everybody goes through those times and it's just money does not fix anything. If you're a good person, you're a good person, whether you got money or not. This business to me was never about the money. Going back to like the kids being young, I missed more stuff when Jordan, more than any, was young. Because that's when it was really starting. And Jenna some. Jake's the youngest. He's been on the end of getting all the attention because we made it through some of that. But, you know, gave up when they are young, but now I can be more present now than I ever could have been. Because if I was still in a truck today, it would still be the same scenario, you know, at all the kids.
And that was my biggest thing. Like when I left Pure Air, I got rid of my CDL completely. I was like, I'm not getting back in a truck. It's not worth the time away from your family, you know, being gone. Like, and it's dangerous too, being out there on the road all the time with accidents and weather and all that. But
very,
you know,
dangerous.
I'm at the point in my life where, you know, getting up at 2:33 in the morning and working until 8 at night, being at home with the kids, I would cut stuff, I would sell my truck, I would do stuff before I would go back to living that life, if that's what it came down to.
I think we kind of made the same commitment when he came off the road, when no looking back. Failure wasn't an option.
Yeah, the time that when Rick gently pushed me out, there was no going back in my mind already. And once I make up my mind, it's kind of all or nothing. So those were probably the harder years than what the first two or three were, because at that point you're pushed out of the nest, so to speak. You don't have anything else to rely on. So the drive and motivation that you have, and I still have to this day, is I never want to go back to where I came from. Not that I came from somewhere bad.
Right.
It was a great job, but I don't want to go back to that. So whether we need to push more or not, I'm always pushing and then hiring people. You know, Brett takes care of the gun shop. I don't worry about that. You take care of the guys and the molds now. I don't have to worry about that. Sarah, which my wife's on here now, but everybody that calls thinks Sarah is my wife. So those listening, when you call, you're talking to Sarah and she's not my wife. It's actually my wife's friend, though. But
best friend.
Yeah. So she's like step Mrs. Muddy River then.
Yes. Yeah. Well, Texas Roadhouse is in between
there.
Yeah.
Hey, we're taking applications.
Yeah. Everybody needs a good stepmommy.
Hey, I'm glad Julie's sitting on that side of the table so she can't hit me.
Throw darts at you.
But you get to a point where you can hire people to take some of that stress. Because before I had any of you guys, including Brett, that was the stress I already have on top of all that other stuff. It's more than what one person can do and manage efficiently.
Oh, absolutely. And I remember, and I'm sure you did, you know, back to my conversations with you before I came on board, I could tell you would be so stressed out about a lot of this stuff. And I said, Kevin, you are going to have to get to the point, and I know this is your livelihood. You've put so much time, effort, blood, sweat, tears, money into this thing. But you are going to have to get to the point, if you're going to survive, where you're going to have to bring in people you can trust and hand off these things. Not that you're ever going to be completely out, but you cannot take every one of the phone calls anymore. And you cannot worry about ordering every piece of Kydex anymore. And you cannot try and, you know, get every gun. You know,
and honestly, the phone calls was the hardest part, because I did it for so long, and looking back, I don't know how I did it, because Brett can attest to this even as much as Julie can. I mean, we'd be doing something out 8 o'clock at night, and I'd answer the phone.
Well, and
people were shocked that I'd answer it, but the problem was, if I didn't answer it then, the next day, I had so many calls, there's no way I would have a chance to call those people back.
You'll forget about them.
I forget, and that sounds terrible, but my phone rang from the time I got up to the time I went to bed. I mean, how many nights do I, even now I put my phone on silent, because it will ring at 3 o'clock in the morning, like people think you're really going to answer the phone.
And I'm not even sure that they think you're going to answer it as much as they might think it's a landline, and they're leaving a voicemail for you to call them back the next day.
Yeah, so we have phones forwarded all the time.
Because like someone myself, I work overnight, so a lot of
that is true.
I get stuff done overnight because I sleep during the day, so... But it's a constant. It never stops. Emails and the phone calls.
We've got family members and friends and former coworkers. And like when I talk to him, they'll be like, "How's Kevin doing?" I try and call him and I don't get through.
Right.
And I was like, if you realized how much that phone rings, how many text messages and emails, it is not for lack of wanting to call you back or whatever. But you know, you try and give them the. But people don't realize just the sheer volume when your phone rings that much.
And now we've switched to. Sarah still answers the phone during the day, you know, 9 to 4 or whatever, answers the phone. We try to switch a lot of stuff to email. And I know for some people that called forever, it was a hard switch because they're used to talking to somebody. But as Brett said, before I talked to you at 8 o'clock at night, this gives record. So the problem can always be taken care of, or not even a problem, but something you need is always taken care of. Because in my mind, I couldn't keep track of all that. I mean, nobody can. So now with emails, and I still to this day answer emails. We're going to bed and I'll be answering emails. I mean, I answer emails all night long, but that's easier to manage than phone calls. Because we can be sitting there watching a movie, doing family stuff, and still.
Or I can be having a full-blown conversation with him. And then I ask him a question at the end and he's like, "What'd you say?"
You
probably should email them.
Yeah. Just saying. Well, if she'd get on this email train, she'd get the same customer service they get.
Support at muddyrivertactical.com. We'll get back to you in 3 days.
Yeah.
So to compound, we added the gun shop. And when we went full time after COVID, 2.5, 3 years ago, phone calls doubled. I mean.
Yes, absolutely.
Very quickly. And we still get them to this day. So,
and the hardest part about the gun shop is... It's a separate deal. People, like we talked about on the other episode, still want to talk to me for whatever reason. I give them Brett's number, which is the gun shop number. Well, as far as internet presence go, the gun shop's Muddy River Tactical too, which in hindsight, maybe should have been something else. But the problem is we share the same address, so Google would have still put them together.
Mm-hmm.
So we get... calls that are not even holster calls or local service calls for transfers or ammo or whatever, which come through all night long too. Or he gets calls all day for the holster stuff. So that's been the hardest part. And it's still kind of a battle trying to separate that. And there's just not a good way, because the presence that Muddy River Tactical has on, as a whole on the internet, takes you to the holster side. Even for the locals.
We're getting big enough, the landline is probably going to get more realistic.
Yeah,
Where you're going to have to choose where you want to go.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And we never thought we really needed that, but it's getting there. Yeah. I mean, if we going to keep the phone calls up, obviously. Yeah. If you don't have phone calls, we're going to lean more towards emails, and no, you don't need to go that direction right now. But
yeah, it's just that weird thing. Like for us, switching to emails is a big enough jump, you know, but to go to... a company that's got a automated, hey, do you want to talk to them or them, just seems weird to us. Because even now with emails, we're so customer service driven, that just seems
Well, yeah, you built the entire brand on being the best customer service, no BS lifetime guarantee. I mean, some of the guarantees we get in, you know, we honor them, but you know, there's no way that, you know, that thing snapped like that or whatever. And, you know, you built the whole brand off of not messing with people because we don't want to turn away the one people that had the freak accident to their holster and, you know, ever accuse anybody of being a liar.
Yeah, I mean, by far and large, we got amazing customers, but just like anything online, and I call it the Amazon world, we get holsters sent back that are not our holsters, that are somebody else's holsters, so that they don't have to pay for our holster.
We'll also get, I mean, just random items.
Yeah, we got a Yankees hat. I mean, we get stupid stuff. And for those, it's irritating, but then you look at, like, well, if they went through that much trouble and they need $30 that bad, we're going to spend more labor time trying to fix it.
They're still going to tell their friends that they have a Muddy River holster.
Yeah.
Whether they tell their friends they paid for it or not, that's a different story.
Well, the funniest story about people saying they didn't get stuff is, remember the guy, this was probably right about when the gun shop, he sent us this nasty email. And I'd never understand nasty emails because we're the easiest people to work with. It's like, just tell me what happened. You don't have to try to prove you're mad for us to help you. But anyways, that's what he is trying to do. So, okay, cool. We'll replace it. He said he never got the holster and can't believe we'd do that to him, blah, 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 blah. And we've done this long enough. I can get a pretty good read on people. I'm still going to take care of them because it's not worth the hassle. We pull up his Facebook page. He has a post showing off how badass this Muddy River Tactical holster is. 30 minutes after he sends me this email about not getting it, can't believe we'd do that to him, and wanting his money back. He didn't want another holster. He wanted his money back. But that's the type of stuff you deal with.
I'm sure the postman came right after he hit send, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Probably just didn't have a chance to, you know, reply back to you quite yet.
Yeah.
All right. So going through this, there's all sorts of people, and not just, you know, women out there, but men, all sorts of spouses, and, you know, their significant other has got this dream. Like, what would you tell people that are the spouses or loved ones of aspiring entrepreneurs? Like, what can they best do to, like, support them, assist them? Like, going back, what would you tell yourself, like, getting into this mess?
I mean, patience. There is no way for you in this, being an entrepreneur's wife, there is absolutely no way to, I thought all along it was balance and, like, prioritizing. And there's really no way to balance it. You just have to carve time out for each other. You have to have patience with them, understanding the unbelievable amount of stress he's under. And I feel like I'm stressed because I don't have enough time with him, or the kids don't have enough time with him, or we don't have him enough at home, whatever the case may be, is I just have to understand patience. Like, and I feel like I've always kind of been an impatient human being, and this has taught me a level of patience I didn't really even know that I had. But I definitely feel like just supporting him. He comes home, he has a bad day, or not even a bad day, but maybe an extra stressful day. I used to kind of take that personal because he'd kind of come home in a bad mood.
Like, why aren't you happy to see me?
Right, exactly.
I've been looking forward to seeing you
all day. And then you come home and you're grumpy. But he's also learned to be a better communicator. He used to be one where he didn't want to dump that on me. So he would just be real quiet and standoffish. And I think he realized that that is where I would in turn internalize it and think that I done something. So we just have got over the years, we've just learned to be really good communicators. When he's stressed and overwhelmed, where I don't take it personally, he says, I had a super stressful day. And I'm like, well, tell me what happened. And then we just talk about it and he'll bounce ideas off of me. I think I've gotten to the point now he bounces so many ideas off of me that when he doesn't, or he quote unquote forgets to, I get my feelings hurt. I'm like,
Well, I think at the beginning more so, the last couple of years, not so much, but the beginning years, it was so stressful, just everyday stuff. But then I would tell her stuff and I could tell she was stressed about it. So in my mind, I'm like, it's already more stress than one person needs. We both don't need to wear that stress, right, wrong, or indifferent. You know, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, and I think we just had to work through that when you're happy and celebrating, I'm happy and celebrating. When you're stressed and down and out, I'm going to be stressed and down and out with you. Like, that's just how we roll. We're one person. And I, you know, my line of work, what I do, I'll call him in the morning on the way home after getting off shift. And he's like, how was your night? And I'll try and explain to him like some situations that maybe some calls we ran or whatever. And even though I know he doesn't fully grasp it, I just need to like get that off of my heart too, because, you know, it stresses me out. But him and I guess kind of bond, stress bond, if you will. That's the best way I can say it. We stress bond.
But I think her, and going back to the business stuff, I don't care if you're married and starting a business, if your spouse, it don't matter if it's guy, girl, whichever side you're on, if your spouse is not going to support it, it's never going to work.
Agreed.
So there's been times where we haven't seen eye to eye, but we've always made it through because she has been that supportive. I mean, there's times to this day, she don't understand what I'm doing or why I'm doing it, but she's supportive and doesn't even question it anymore.
No, I don't. I mean, I'll get frustrated at times, but I'll even keep my frustrations to myself because I just trust the process. And I think I could say to any entrepreneur's spouse is you just have to fasten your seatbelt. If they have the drive and the grit and the tenacity to be an entrepreneur to begin with, and failure, you know, is not an option, you just have to trust the process. And that's something that I've learned to wholeheartedly give him is just trust. He's never once failed us in this. And I've had a lot of people say, you know, that I'm with him because he's very successful and all this stuff. I was with him when we didn't have nothing but the change jingling in our pocket.
You can ask Jordan to this day, and I still like it. Maybe we're just grew up redneck enough. I don't know, but mac and cheese and hot dogs and stuff like that.
Oh, that's one of my favorites.
I would still eat it to this day. But
fish sticks.
Jordan's like, I'm never eating that again because that's all we ate when I was a kid. That
we ramen noodles. We were so broke. We didn't, I mean, literally, we'd get all of our bills paid and we'd have enough left over to like run and grab some hot dogs, some mac and cheese, some ramen. And he's like, Mom, I can't stand mac and cheese and hot dogs to this day because of that. Ate so much of that crap when I was little.
He gets his bouginess from his mother.
All right, Brett, I got one for you here. I've told this to people and they do not believe it. Our mom has got this dessert that she thinks is the best thing on earth. And I hate to admit that I like it. So just as somebody that's probably never heard of this. Have you ever heard of someone cutting a banana in half and lathering it up with Miracle Whip and serving it as a dessert?
It is actually amazing.
So you got to try it next time. So
now you're going to make me want to get some on the way home and go all redneck childhood.
Absolutely disgusting.
I am the only one in my house that will eat them. And they're like, you are so gross. It's like, you do not know what you're missing out on.
I'd eat them.
My family grew up with the down home milkshake. It's the cornbread left over from dinner. And you just put it a cup, and then you pour milk on it.
Down home milkshake.
Oh, that sounds great.
And you just eat cornbread with a spoon and milk.
Yeah. I like cornbread. I could probably tear some of that up.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, it would go real good in there. It's like if we had a Texas Roadhouse roll milkshake.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's just go ahead and talk about.
Here we go.
That took longer than expected.
Okay. Here comes Tupac. Tupac's in the building. Hang on.
We went to dinner one night at Texas Roadhouse. And we were sitting there, our little server comes up, and she's early 20s, and she absolutely, unequivocally, without a doubt, had a crush on Kevin.
She was taking my order.
No, she was. Any woman that's listening to this will understand. We can pick up on female vibes 100%. It's their facial expressions, it's their body language. She had her shoulders turned towards Kevin. She was like, she kept calling him sweetie.
And when I go to edit this, we're going to have a crazy meter on the side of you. So it's going to be peaking.
Just to cut
right
you off
now.
Real quick, on behalf of Kevin, I would like to thank you for pointing that out. So now he has a side chick because of you.
Yeah, 100%.
You can blame yourself for this. You
still got it.
So now everybody thinks it's so funny when they, like for Christmas, all of our guys went in and got us a Texas Roadhouse gift card.
At the St. Joe location only.
Yeah, we have one. We're about halfway in between either the St. Joe Texas Roadhouse location or the Berry Road location. And in the Christmas card, it says from all your guys and staff at Muddy River, This is to be used only at the St. Joe location, which is where this girl works. So fast forward, we go to use our gift card. We walk in. I immediately start scanning the room. And I'm like, nope, she's not working tonight. Fantastic.
She even turns toward me and goes, she ain't working.
Yeah. So I was like, we're in the clear.
And I like to go, yeah, I know. I already knew that.
So we sit down. We're eating. And all of a sudden, he pulls up his phone. I have my back to the... We're in a booth, and I have my back.
I have
back.
My mouth full.
And we've got our two youngest kids with us. Our 11-year-old and our 6-year-old. And we're sitting there, and all of a sudden, Kevin's phone comes out. And he, like, draws it up. And I can tell he's...
Like, up over my head.
Like, recording or taking a picture. And my face. I was like, what are you doing? He's like, she's here. She's right behind you.
So I got
you.
A picture in her face. Do the face for the camera.
I was.
And I got that with the girl in the background. It is and the most amazing picture ever. So then the rest of the night I spent, come on, baby, just take a picture with her. Kids need a stepmommy. And yeah.
So that's our joke now, is that's the kid's stepmom.
So poor girl at Texas Roadhouse. If you ever have a chick mean mugging you every time she walks in there, that's probably my wife.
Don't give her a steak knife.
Yeah.
Yeah, just a fork.
We don't need no stabby stabby going on.
Just a little protective.
All right.
We're 17 years in.
So as a female, and I've just got a few more for you, then we'll get to our viewer question of the week. As a female, your thoughts on concealed carry, like how do you like to conceal carry when you're doing it? Do you have like a purse that you like, a cross draw holster? Like what do you prefer?
Yeah, we sell the conceal and carry purses. That's what I typically like whenever we're out in public, like the kids and I.
She's got like the Vertex is the one she has.
It's the brand.
It's almost not even a purse. It's more like a...
It's a crossbody.
Like
it's
a crossbody
a
fanny
like
pack type looking
Lululemon
thing.
Yeah. Style. But it's Vertex. Mm-hmm. It's Vertex brand. He picked out the... It's got like a Velcro insert with an attachment that the holster kind of attaches Velcro-wise. And it seats really well in there. And I can still fit all my stuff in there. So I do like that one. And then if I'm going to wear an actual holster like one of ours, I like the Ulti Clip. Because I wear a lot of leggings and I hardly ever wear a belt. So
okay, perfect. And do you have a favorite gun that you like to carry when you're concealed carry? Or
Kevin, what's that revolver you have me carrying?
She's got a J frame, but she also likes the Shadow Systems CR920, mm-hmm. which is the Shadow Systems Glock 43, more or less. It fits her hand good.
And I love SIGs.
SIG 365.
Yeah.
Okay. Those are all pretty popular ones and, you know, really good for, especially like ladies and even like guys with smaller hands. And, you know, my boys have shot those, you know, teaching them how to shoot. And
now something that's not concealing carry that's super badass. It just came out that Kevin did a video on YouTube was the Henry Homesteader. I do like that gun.
That rifle,
that's neat.
9mm rifle.
I need to shoot that one.
It's cool.
So that kind of leads us into our viewer question of the week, and this is from Colin, and I will not give out your last name, Colin, but you know who you are, from Platte City, Missouri. And what was the first gun you received? So, like most people, you know, your dad, grandpa, somebody gives you a gun. And then the first gun that you actually purchased. And Brett, I'll kind of let you lead off on this one if you want.
My first gun was when my grandpa passed away. He left me a Remington 700. No, I apologize. Not Remington. It's a Ruger 270. That's what it was. And I still have it today. First gun I bought was the Remington 700 243. So I do not have it today. That's one of the ones I regret. So, yeah. Yep.
What about you, Kevin?
So the first gun I got was a deer rifle that our Uncle Chip, actually, Uncle Chip and our Aunt Jan gave to me. I was probably 10 or so, is a 243 Remington 700 bolt action, which is the gun that we were talking about earlier that she said would it shoot. But it's one of those guns that I haven't really went to fix just because it's a gun that I'm never going to sell because he's passed away now, but just one I'd never sell. So that's why I haven't really worried about it. The first gun I actually purchased, like I had some different guns given to me, but it was actually the Shield that we talked about in the first or second episode, whatever it was. I bought the shield and that coyote gun the same day when I brought them home, and she was really thrilled with me. And an immense thug baby on me and tell me I'm an idiot and blah, blah, blah. But it was that shield, which I actually do not still have. We sold it in the gun shop. When Brett said the gun shop, when we brought in guns that we, during COVID, we sold it then.
Personal inventory.
Which I wish I would have never, because it was literally the first holsters of Muddy River Tactical, quote unquote, were off of it. But anyways, we did. So that was my first.
Julie, do you want to chime in or do you want me to go?
Well, all mine were Kevin's, because I never had guns growing up, because my dad was never
around. Sounds like a gold digger to me.
She was after him for his guns the whole time.
I knew it. Don't tell her about that other safe we have at the shop.
What safe?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not surprised.
So for me, the first gun that ever got given to me, our dad actually bought it for me. We had a, I don't know if you remember, we had that like tornado go down by the farm, and that big tree had put limbs everywhere in the front yard.
Yep.
And we were down there, and Kevin was young. I mean, and he helped, but he was like 7 or 8. Like,
I just wasn't very old.
Not quite old enough to help, and I'm 11 and just getting ready to start turkey hunting. It's a spring or whenever it was. And this tornado had went through, and we picked up limbs all day long, made a bonfire, and, you know, worked harder than one of the hardest days I've ever worked in my life, picking up all these sticks and cleaning up. So Dad's like, look, I was going to pay you, but how about I just buy you a turkey gun instead? So it's a Remington 870 12 gauge that I got that I still have, but again, that I'll never sell. So that was the first gun that was ever given to me. And then the first gun I think I ever bought was a Savage 7mm mag. And I was just turned 18, and that's when James went down to the farm deer hunting with us. I bought it a day or two before deer season opened in November.
You're the typical deer season guy.
Oh, yeah. So this is actually a pretty good story.
Now like, we know, yeah.
James calls me Beirut because of the story. So I'm 18. I'm working at Petco making like 10 bucks an hour. So it was everything I had to have money for this gun, plus gas money to get to the farm. And then I'm going to figure out how to eat when I get there.
You had to have your cigarettes at that age.
Oh, I had to have cigarettes and maybe found some beer like on the side of the road or something, like whatever. Yeah. But so I didn't have a lot of money for shells, right? So I bought a box of shells, the gun, and thank God it already had a scope on it. And we go down, and I don't want to shoot it at our farm where we're going to be hunting the next day. So my buddy James, and I'm sure he'll chime in on this, but his grandma lived a few miles away. So we drive over, and we're sighting it in behind her house. But it's like getting dark, and we're trying to hunt the next morning. This is Friday night. We drove from Kansas City 2 hours. It gets dark at like 5:30. It's probably 5:15. I'm trying to sight in this rifle. It's like, I don't have any hearing protection. I'm like, whatever. I got to I'm shooting this.
Especially with that gun.
Shooting this 7 mag, and it kicks like a mule. You don't want to shoot it more than about twice anyway. So I'm shooting it, and I cannot get this thing sighted in, and it's cold, and it's getting dark, and I'm sick of shooting this thing already, and I'm down to where I've got like 5 or 6 rounds left. So I was like, well, I had it on the paper, but it wasn't really close. So this is Friday. Saturday hunt, don't see anything. And that's the day. So Saturday afternoon, we had went over to James's grandma's place to hunt, and we come back, and Dad is walking down the lane, and Dad wore solid orange overalls when he was hunting. Well, James and I come pull him back in, and Dad turns around, and he's carrying his gun. He's got the other hand kind of down like that, and there's blood all over the front of his coveralls. So it's like, Dad got a deer. So we're like, where's he at? He's like, right here. In his hand, he had tried to climb over the T-post fence, and it slipped, and that T-post went in.
T-post top went all the way into
all the way in. You could see the tendons, the bones. I was like, Dad, you need to go to the hospital now. He's like, it'll be all right.
He wasn't gonna go until Helen talked him into it. Yeah, we were just idiot kids telling him to go.
Our great aunt Helen, she raised 5 boys on the farm, and they never went to the doctor. She came over and said, Danny, you need to go to the hospital now. So he's like, I'll go in the morning. So next morning I get up and go out hunting. I'm thinking Dad's gonna go to the hospital, and he's like, I'm sitting there, and you could hear his truck start because it was really loud. And Didn't hear him. I'm like, I better go check on Dad. So I'm getting ready to get up, and about 150 yards out walks this deer. And at that time, I had never seen a deer this big. I didn't know they existed. And ends up, it, being this 15-point buck.
It was probably one of them.
That's how mine was.
Big one.
So this deer comes out, and I'm sitting in a ground blind, soft-sided ground blind. So I've got the gun. I don't even have a rest. I've got like an old folding chair. I'm trying to lean it on, and I'm going like this with a gun that's not sighted in. So were you sitting with James down there hunting, like in the tree stand?
I don't know, but while we're talking about James, he would be podcast gold.
Oh,
we have to have Big James on at some point.
Yeah, we're going to get him on. So anyway, this deer comes out, and I'm shaking like a leaf because I've never seen anything this big in my life. And I shoot, and I swear to God, this deer turns and starts running right at me. And it in my head, it looks like a bull with antlers down running at the blind. And this is a bolt action that I've shot a total of like 14 times up until now. So I'm trying to jack one in, and I shoot again. And he's still coming. I was like, ah.
It sounded like World War II in the corner over there.
So this gun held four, and I know because...
He shot every damn one of them.
So it turned. I shoot, and it kind of fell. I was like, oh, good, I got him. Well, then he starts, like, trying to get up. So I shot the last one at him, and then he kind of made it over to the fence. I was like, oh, good, I got him. Well, then he tries to start crawling under the fence again. So I'm putting more bullets in. I shot every shell I had left at this deer. And so James comes up, he's like, it sounds like Beirut over here. What's going on? I was like, well, I got this deer. And when we skinned it, there was one hole in that deer. So, kids, do not do that. If you're going to get a rifle, buy it like more than a week before season. Maybe take it to the range, get familiar with it.
It's not just kids.
Right.
Every year, it never fails. And I have best friends that call me, hey, can you sight this rifle in for me? No, first off, I don't sight rifles in. I can bore sight it for you, and that puts you on paper.
Hopefully.
But every year, 2 days, 3 days before, sometimes the day before, luckily I shut down opening day every year for that reason. Otherwise, it'd show up that morning. They're like, hey, can you sight this in for me?
Hey, I missed one. Can you sight it in for me?
Your gun sucks. Yeah. All right. Well, those have been pretty good stories. Julie, do you have anything else you want to tell us? Anything you'd like to say about Muddy River? Maybe how great of a husband Kevin is? Anything like that?
He's all right. No, there was one question that we didn't get to about our family working for us. And
absolutely.
With us.
Yeah, let's take
and
a few minutes.
That's something that I wanted to touch on just because my dad works there. You, as my brother-in-law, works there. Brett might as well be family.
Got Sarah.
My best friend, Sarah, she works there. And that has been such a blessing to us. A lot of people don't understand or can't believe that we have family work for us. But I think since that's happened, I've gotten more of my husband back because he knows the trust is there. He can finally relinquish some of that stuff that he held on to for so many years that I feel like took him away from us as family. He now has relinquished some of that to you guys, and he knows that Muddy River's in good hands. You guys treat it as if it's all of our business. It's not just Kevin's business. We all look out for Muddy River. And so that's something that I feel super blessed that we have family that is committed to us, committed to Muddy River. And when Kevin and I are succeeding, we're all succeeding. So nobody wants to see failure, and failure is just not an option for any of us.
Yeah, the high tide raises all the boats.
Without a doubt. And I'm glad I backed out. I get the question all the time. And I know even people have asked Kevin this, why does your wife work? She doesn't have to work. She can be a stay-at-home mom. And again, it goes back to perception. I do not have to work. I am blessed. We live a very financially blessed life. However, I like to work, and I do not like to work for our family business.
You don't idle very well either.
I do not idle well.
And I think her going back to work helped our marriage more than anything, because she's always been a worker anyways. So going and not having, kind of the same reason I will always work, going and having no identity of what to do other than what she used to say, oh, I'm just Muddy River's wife. She loves the medical field. She's great at the medical field. She loves caring for people. Her being on that ambulance is the best thing for her, because it not only brings our insurance is absolutely ridiculous, which is why she went back. We are paying $3,000 a month for our family's insurance, and then they still don't carry anything. I mean, it's a stupid amount of money. That 1 year we spent $50,000 out of pocket when Jake went to
Jordan had that hernia, emergency and Jake room. Had to go to the ER, and our it's basically we were paying almost three. It was like $2,800. Might as well call it $3,000, and it was like major medical. And now I work for an ambulance district that has the most incredible insurance.
It's like $50 a paycheck, and they cover
everything. It's super good.
And it
good
gives her an identity.
I'm not just a mom. And not that those aren't incredibly fulfilling things, but I have to have something other than just being Kevin's wife, just being Jordan, Jenna, and Jake's mom. And I love, like he said, the medical field. So I love the fact that we have family that works for our business to where I can step out and go do what I love to do and have my own identity outside of Muddy River.
Well, and you guys talk about that in the family, and, you know, Jordan was in not too long ago talking about it, and we had a conversation, the three of us, in Kevin's office with Jordan, and, you know, you guys told him, and we all told him the same thing. It's like, look, if you come here and I'm in charge of the guys and you're not cutting it, I will have to fire you.
Yep.
I do not want to fire you. You are my nephew. But I will, and my expectations of you are the same expectations of me.
Yep.
And, you know,
if not a little bit more.
And I can say it's higher, would be higher on him than it is anybody else, just like my expectations of myself are higher than everybody else that works for it. And, you know, I told him, it's like, this isn't my company, but I treat it no different than if I was the one writing the paychecks.
For sure. It's perception. We have instilled that as best as we can into his 16-year-old mind.
And that generation's hard.
It is. He already gets a lot of grief at school. People call him like the rich kid and stuff like that because we live on a farm and things like that. But the thing about it is, and I tell Jordan this all the time, we're not rich. We're blessed, A, and B, everything we have. We have worked for. There's nothing that's been given to us.
Him included.
Absolutely.
He may not be at the holster shop every day bleeding like you guys are.
Without a doubt.
But at home or school, whatever it may be.
He has so many responsibilities. We are very hard on our kids.
Even the young ones.
Yes, we really are. I mean, we get constantly praised for our kids being super respectful. They have a good work ethic. And Jordan, you know, we could have went out and bought him a $40,000-$50,000 truck when he turned 16. No, he's driving a 1999 Toyota 4Runner with over 200,000 miles on it. It's perception. They don't want our kids to feel entitled. We don't want our kids to feel like just because mom and dad have worked our asses off and got to where we are, they get to reap that benefit. And that they've been very receptive to that, I feel like.
Yeah, they've come a long way for sure. And it's just a transition of what I tell them all the time. No matter what me or your mom have or don't have, it doesn't mean you have it. We could have nothing and you got nothing, or we could have everything and you still got nothing.
Right.
You have to make your own way unless you're never going to be happy. You know, you got to find what you're passionate about. No different than Julie on the ambulance. She's passionate about that, so it fills her life.
Yep.
And that's why I told all the kids, but more so Jordan because he's older than the other ones. But if you think you're ever going to come to Muddy River and be anything, you're going to work from the bottom and you're going to have to pass all the guys that have been here. You're not going to get a free pass to anything because that's not doing you any favors. It's not going to earn the respect of anybody. It's not going to happen.
No, you'd be doing them a huge disservice, and eventually all of us will be gone one day and it'll be the kids that have to try and run this thing or figure out what they're going to do with it. And, you know, it's all of our jobs, you know, to raise them to be the strongest people they can be and, you know, just see where they go.
Yeah. And that's what me and Julie talk about all the time. It's like what our drive is. I don't want to force to be their drive either.
Right.
They may not want to be entrepreneurs and have that stress because no matter whether you quote unquote made it or not, the stress never goes away.
Right.
At the end of the day, you're still responsible for not only yourself and your family, but at this point, 11 other people and their family. What you do can make or break everything for that.
Right.
So the stress never goes away. So I'd never want to force them like, hey, come to Muddy River. If they come, they're going to work their way from the bottom and go. And if they don't, Jordan's talked about airplane pilot and stuff. Go do what you want to do.
Diesel mechanic, you know?
Go do yourself and find your line. Don't rely on my line if that's not what you want to do.
Right.
Yeah, no, that makes all the sense in the world. No different than, you know, what sports they want to play or whatever. You
exactly.
know, but they've got a long life to live, and you know, if they're not happy doing it, then they're just not going to be happy. Period.
I agree.
All right, guys. I think we're going to try and wrap this up for today, unless you got anything else you want to throw in there. I would encourage everybody, if you enjoyed the podcast, go check it out. If you're listening to it on the road, check it out on YouTube. You get to kind of see us a little bit behind the scenes, kind of what it looks like in the studio. If you can listen online, that's great too. We're on Spotify, Apple. Are we on Apple yet? We're working on it.
Apple's weird. We're working on it.
Okay. A lot of places where you can get podcasts were available.
Podbean.
Yeah. MuddyRiverTactical.com. You can see the episodes there. There's a link where you can view live. There's also transcripts. So if we have any hearing impaired listeners, it's on there for them too, where they can kind of get the vibe of what we're saying. Follow us on Twitter, X, whatever it's going by now, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, all the above. Again, as always, we appreciate Quentin Cox for doing our music.
Yes, Quentin's my coworker.
Yeah, so I met amazing. Quentin. Quentin works with Julie at the. He's a paramedic, so that's how I met Quentin. And yeah, he's a super good dude.
Very good dude. He has his own band, and definitely go check him out. Quentin Cox and Company. He's got amazing music. He's on Apple and stuff like that. He's my buddy.
Excellent. Well, everybody, thank you for tuning in. Been a great week, and we'll catch you guys on episode 4 next week.
Thank you, Julie.
Thank you, Julie.
You're welcome, babe.
Thanks, boss.
You're welcome, employee.
All right. See y'all later.
Bye.